The DeFalco Files is an entertainment-based program. Some memories of certain events might be fuzzy. All opinions are that of the host. Content might not be appropriate for children and some adults. Listener discretion is advised. And remember, the truth is here. Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting presents The DeFalco Files with FSW owner Joe DeFalco and your host, Matt Michaels.
Hey everybody, it's Matt Michaels here on The DeFalco Files with the owner creator of FSW, Future Stars of Wrestling here in Las Vegas, Mr. Joe DeFalco. Joe, how you doing today?
Oh, tremendous. You know, my COVID's starting to dissipate. So, you know, I got my cough here and there. But other than that, you know, I finally, like, showed up back at the school and trying to function like a human being again.
Well, you're looking more like a human being today. So that's a good sign.
Yeah, maybe because I showered or something.
And the guest today is someone who is, yeah, I mean, Sandra Moon has been around FSW wrestling
for like 12 years.
Yeah, man. Yes. It's amazing to have you on because I want to, you know, get into that. And it's great that we can talk to someone who's like literally gone through the process of FSW's training. So let's start out today by talking about your basic start of your love of wrestling. Were you do you remember your first thoughts or memories of watching wrestling and thinking this was something you'd like to do?
Yeah, I do actually. So it started around the time my oldest brother had just gotten back into wrestling. He was probably like in his early 20s, just started getting back into it, and then started showing my other brother, my middle brother, Lazarus, you know, basically wrestling, and they would watch WWE together. I wasn't really too into it. I didn't really pay attention much. But then they started going to these live shows during that time. They were called PPW, Paragon Pro Wrestling. They're no longer running in Vegas anymore, but they started going to those live shows, and I was invited, so I decided to tag along. And I just remember it being one of the most surreal experiences I've ever, like, seen. I didn't really go out much as, like, a kid, and I was probably around 15 at the time. I didn't go out much, so that I thought that was sort of just crazy. It was just these larger-than-life, like, people, you know? It's what it seemed like, especially with, like, the Sam's Town setup. It was pretty insane with, like, the lighting and, like, the way they would play, like, all the vignettes on, like, the screen. It was really interesting. There were a lot of wrestlers that I just, like, quickly just was like, yeah, like, they're super cool. And one now being, like, I remember Anthony Gray, now August Gray on NXT. It's like he was one of my favorites. Same with like the Whirlwind Gentlemen. They were crazy. And I always thought that was really cool. And I remember just from there, it's like every single Paragon show, we would just be going. Me and my brother, my family, they would all just get sort of dragged along just because I think just the live event feeling really just drew me in and just made it all seem just really crazy. And then I never really thought about starting to do wrestling. I always enjoyed watching it and just like being a fan. And then my brother was really drawn to becoming a wrestler, like starting training. He would always watch videos about like where the best training schools were, like where they were. And I remember he found FSW and he was looking into training there in like their kids class. And so from there, I was still like, I don't really want to do wrestling. it was like really pulling teeth in me. I didn't really want to do it. I wasn't really like an active kid. I didn't do sports. I didn't do like the gymnastics or, you know, I played softball, but then quit. it was really just like a foreign concept to me. But somewhere along the lines, I was dragged along in there. I remember we walked in, we first met with Joey. And he was just basically kind of showing us around and just talking about everything. And I was just like, talking to me sort of like one ear in, the other ear out. I'm very like spacey. So it's, I was just like, sure. Okay. And then we, from there, just sort of, you know, I just took a chance with it and was just kind of started doing it, started joining the kids class and drew into it.
Joe, what are your memories when you first heard of Sandra and Laz going to classes? And do you remember anything about, obviously Sandra has a fabulous personality. Was she shy at that time, or was she always kind of an outgoing person who showed up on the radar? And you're on mute there, Joe.
I know. Here we, you know, it's that coughing binge. Basically, everybody was really quiet when they walked in. They didn't know people, you know, and that was the thing about the kids class. It was a way for people that were generally probably shy, didn't have a lot of friends. And we've seen how so many of them have become lifelong friends, you know, around the same time. Vinny VIP was also, you know, part of that mix of being a part of the kids class. And since they were all in that similar age range, I would say between like 14 and 15, you know, we ended up getting like a good crew all of a sudden, like within a few months of each other. So there was a lot of bonding going on, but I wasn't really sitting in on the kids class for 2 hours.
Right.
You know, I'd be in the office, I'd bounce around. The only time they really saw me is when they had to make payments, you know, and because that's how it was. And in a lot of the cases, it was the parents or a guardian or somebody else. You know, generally the 12-year-old didn't walk in and like, oh, here's your payment, Joe. You know, it wasn't the same type of conversations that I would have with somebody who, you know, walked in. Like yesterday, we had a brand new student come in, and it was a funny story that he tells me. Because about 5 years ago, I remember getting a call from a lady whose son was having a bar mitzvah. And she was curious if FSW, he's a big wrestling fan. And we had talked, and I think Leon Hader, who runs the kids class, and I'm not sure if it was Cash or who it was, but they actually went to the kids bar mitzvah and, you know, messed around, blah, blah, blah. And 5 years later, the kids signed up yesterday at FSW. So, you know, it's just a story to get in there. And it's like, yeah, you know, with Laz and Cassandra and Vinny, a lot of the kids who before that, who started in the kids class, never really progressed to where they, hey, I'm going to go train in the regular class. Spider was like the first kid who ever did that.
Yeah.
And they were really the kickoff of now having a lot of our kids class kids, you know, go over to that next level. You know, like we said, we talked about Bodie. Bodie's just 14 years old. He was 8 years old, you know, when he started at FSW. So, and then, you know, a lot more Davion now and Dana Lynn, and it's almost like a minor league of FSW. We like to call them the future stars. But between Spider, there was a long lull, I guess you could say, of those kids. A lot of times they'd hit 16, 17. They decided, you know, they were done with wrestling. You know, some gave it a little bit of a try, but nothing much. But with Sandra, Laz, and Vinny, you know, those three kind of came in together in the adult classes. Because I'm pretty sure, I guess, with Vinny, they formed a friendship. And now all of a sudden it was like, hey, they were taking the next step. And, you know, and it wasn't like, hey, 6 months later, it was a couple of years. Yeah. You know, Sandra was probably 17 when she started in the regular classes. But the kids class in reality doesn't really get you ready. You know, it teaches you some stuff, and it teaches you more discipline and things that you need to do. But she'll be the first to tell you, training in the regular class and having fun in kids class is a whole different thing.
Well, Sandra, what was the kids class like for you before we start talking about, you know, you advancing into becoming a pro wrestler? Was it the camaraderie that kept you around? Was it the fun that you were having in the ring itself? Was it the discovery of things that you might have not known your own body could do? Because like you said, you weren't very athletic. What was it about those classes that made you interested enough to continue on?
That's a really good question. So I think a lot of it was like the camaraderie certainly helped. And definitely the element of like, wow, I can actually do something, you know, like I used to be really like into video games and stuff, you know, like the non-active, of course. It was a real, like, it shocked me, you know, I didn't know I was capable of doing wrestling and getting into that entertainment aspect that I sort of fell in love with. And I think it was sort of a mixture of both. Like, I was always really awkward in the kids' class too, especially when it came to like, just kind of doing moves. Like, you would always like do practice like these WWE finishes, and I'm like, well, I don't know anything about the WWE, you know. It was just all so foreign to me that I was sort of like stuck in this little bubble that, you know, I started growing out of with knowing all these people, with sort of growing and getting more comfortable with myself and my, like, you know, my peers, like yeah. I did like with Vinny. And there was like a couple other, like my old friend, his name was Keanu. It's like that sort of camaraderie made me more comfortable to sort of be myself and learn new things and stop being so awkward. And it was just like such a pivotal part, I think, for my growth.
Sure.
In just being a human being and just being able to communicate. It was certainly just all of the aspects. And I think that's something that Leon Hader and I was also like partially trained by Damian Drake in the kids class, you know, so I think having a mixture of both were certainly just a pivotal part in getting comfortable to even make that next step to the adult class. Cause without all of them, I wouldn't be anywhere probably near as comfortable as far as I have been.
Joe, is it sometimes better when a person goes into, you know, kids' classes or even regular training without a very blurred picture of what wrestling is? You know, just getting the chance to see like local shows and stuff like that, not really watching a major product. Can that sometimes be helpful in the person just literally learning everything through what is being taught as compared to just wanting to go out there and, you know, do WWE moves?
Well, it can be, but you got to understand there's a lot of things the parents are trying to get kids to do when they're, especially for the kids class.
Yeah.
You know, unless they really love professional wrestling and watch Monday Night Raw and SmackDown, generally, parents are going to try to get them in, you know, karate, you know, jujitsu, things that have been traditionally, you know, an activity.
Sure.
That, hey, let's get our lazy kid off the couch and what are we going to get him to do? If the parent is not a pro wrestling fan, you know, 99 out of 100, they're not going to check out FSW.
Right.
They're going to check out the local karate place or whatever it is. And in almost every case, anybody who's come to train, sometimes the parents aren't wrestling fans at all. They don't care about wrestling. They don't really pay attention to it. But they know their kid loves wrestling. And they know their kid tried out a whole bunch of different things that they tried to get him to. And they had no interest in doing it. And what we try to sell the kids class on is instead of having your kids sit at home and just play video games of wrestling for 8 hours, you know, a couple of hours on a Saturday, you know, also a lot of the parents, some drop them off and some don't. And there's a good amount that actually stay and watch. But those kids aren't looking at running the ropes and doing their roles and doing things like that as a physical activity. But it's exactly what it is. You know, if you tell a kid, hey, there's the gym, go run around the building 5 times, they're going to be like, oh, I don't want to do that. That sucks. But if it's like, hey, run the ropes like John Cena, now all of a sudden, wow, they're at 7 years old, at 11 years old, they feel like they're already. They don't know the difference of a pro wrestler. They know they're wrestling. So they're going to tell everybody, hey, I'm a wrestler. I wrestle. I have a class I go to every Saturday. You know, I'm not sure kids who go to karate class tell everybody they're mixed martial artists. You know?
Yeah.
Because there's the bond, and then there becomes the bond because as 11-year-olds, 12-year-olds, it's tough enough to make friends. There's a large proportion of people that aren't wrestling fans. So other kids don't out the fact that, yeah, I love pro wrestling, because they could be made fun of. So now when you're in a position to come to the training school, you're now in a kids class with everybody who loves wrestling. So it's a lot easier to communicate with them. And I always remember noticing that after a getting to know each other, you know, time frame, that all of a sudden these kids in the kids class would have pictures of them hanging out outside of the kids class on numerous occasions, whether it was a party, whether they went to, you know, go downtown, whatever it was. Now all of a sudden these loners, or one and a couple of the friends, now all of a sudden there was a big group, because they all had, you know, what they liked to do. So they had a common denominator in the wrestling. And, you know, I remember when Vinny and Cassandra and Laz, when they first got to wrestle on a show at Sam's Town, you know, one thing about Sandra was she was always very good at moving tickets. You know, she was always able to get family, friends, you know. And I remember, you know, at maybe a half a dozen kids from the kids class who've already dropped out. They got too old. They weren't interested anymore. You know, they all bought a ticket to support the kids from the kids class who were getting to show up at a Sam's Town show and actually be on it.
Yeah, that's remarkable thinking about that type of camaraderie. Sandra, what was it like for you to have a base like that, and what was that feeling like when you walked out of the curtain at Sam's Town and here it is, your friends who you met through this class that you were basically taken to by your brother who wanted to do it more so than you did, and now you're in the same building that, you know, you were watching shows in just a few years earlier?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. It's overwhelming, I think, just to think about that, that it is like the place where I first started even watching it. And I think it was probably one of the more gratifying things, because I've never seen like wrestling with my peers as a competition. I've never seen it as anything more than just having fun when you're wrestling and putting on, of course, like it sort of grows, but even then it's more just having fun with what you're doing and still kind of acknowledging why you're even there. I never got into it for a competition to begin with, you know. It's just not really how I thrive, and I think just to be surrounded by such a supportive like fan base or just group and family. Like, my family's always been supportive of everything I do, which is something that I'm so grateful for, because not a lot of people have that. And I think just being able to have what I had at that time, it was more than I could really ever ask for, especially out of something that I never really saw myself doing. It was definitely a really cool thing to sort of have and see.
Joe, when Sandra gets to start training in the adult classes, you're thinking about, you know, how you can potentially use her. What were the first thoughts about how she becomes part of the show? And you're still on mute.
Well, I hadn't started talking yet. I knew that. Well, the thing is, it's like, you know, everything gets based off, you know, recommendations from the trainers.
Right.
Again, I'm there, I'm watching people, but I'm relying on Kenny and Sin and Remy and Cody, because they're there the most, you know, for them to say, hey, I think this person might be ready for something. Hey, I think this person might be ready for a role. And it's not always necessarily the role of wrestling.
Right.
It's the role of getting put on the shows and then being a small part of the show. And Thomas Day, who is one of the most talented under the radar guys that you will see in professional wrestling. Okay. I've known about him for years. He trained over at AU, but he would never come over because at AU, they didn't do a lot. But what they did was Thomas Day, or Tommy Misfit at the time, he was like their main guy. And all I saw was this really tall, skinny motherfucker, like skinny as skinny could be. And I would hear things like Mike Delight and him were friends in the backyard scene. And this was like in 2009 when I knew Mike Delight. And Tommy was actually on one of our very first shows because Kid Vegas was also kind of bouncing back from AU. And we got a few of the guys. Cash ended up being on the show. Tommy, a guy named Lex Luco, and a couple of others. But didn't really get to showcase much. Tommy worked like the pre-show match. And finally, it took years to get him over. And it was like, yeah, I heard he's pretty good. You know, never anything like I hadn't seen much of stuff, you know. And he came over, and it was kind of like, wow. Like, he, to me, reminded me of a mini Ryan Taylor. And for people who know me, know I'm a very, very big fan of Ryan Taylor. And Ryan's skill level that I really enjoy is watching him with reversals and submissions and how smooth he is. Yeah. Like, people are good, but there's a smoothness about Ryan Taylor. And started to see that in Tommy. Because Tommy was a no-limits guy, you know, him and his missile drop kicks and his 450s. A lot of times he would neglect to do the other stuff that he was really good at, which was the reversals and the submissions. And finally got a piece of that. And then he kind of finally had an idea to finally something different. And when he brought up the idea of doing the yoga character, I'm not sure how it came about, but we felt that was the perfect time for Sandra to kind of get her feet wet, be a valet, maybe get involved, which I always like getting people involved early before they're ready to wrestle regularly on shows, because it gets them comfortable in being seen by the FSW fans. But it also gets the FSW fans to see who this new individual is. Right. Because the FSW fan base is always looking, you know, to get behind that new talent that they see before anybody else. So getting her out there and then getting involved in matches, because they were heels to begin with, you know, it gets her in there, because at that point Maserati is kind of growing a little bit too, and she had been there before. But again, we didn't really have much of a women's division, and at that point when the guy Eric Walker decided to do the FSW women's thing, he created a belt for us. And he got, you know, ill after the first show we did, and we still had a belt. So we decided that now is the time. And as, you know, Sandra progressed and we had Heather, who had a little more experience, you know, it was probably disappointing to the local girls. But at that point, you know, Sandra's 18 years old. Moz is transitioning from, you know, a valet herself. And, you know, I felt at that time putting the belt on Heather Monroe was, you know, the best way to go. It's like there was some in the camp, you know, hey, Moz deserves this. Hey, what about Sandra? And it's like, you know, relax. Everything needs to gel and get there. You know, we want you to be at your close to your best. You know, Sandra, was she progressing really well? Absolutely. But she still had, you know, probably less than 10 matches under her belt. You know, right. she was in there, you know, getting involved, whether it was an intergender match with Tommy or just getting involved in the match. She had very little in-ring experience. But the fact that she got to train with all the guys and all the guys on the main roster, that helped her more than, you know, the one match every, you know, 2 months she might have gotten early on. And we just wanted her to get more and more experience. And being the valet, it got her the experience of still training and getting better, but not having to be exposed for being extremely green and not really being able to be there. Could she have a good match? Sure. Could she have a horrible match? Sure. You know, I bust her balls all the time about, you know, she had a match with on the biggest stage. And it was we're not gonna lie about it. But again, you're talking about a teenager wrestling a girl who's the champion at Impact. She's a champion in Mexico. This woman is world renowned, and this young girl is now stepping in the ring in front of 700-800 people at Sam's Town. Of course she's going to be a little overwhelmed and nervous. Now, if things went right early, would the match have been good? Possibly. But things broke down, and they kind of fell apart from there. But again, everybody has shitty matches. You know, I talk about how when we brought Sean or Eli Drake back, him and Kenny King stunk up to Silverton. You know, yeah. It was what it was. You know, Brian Cage just got off a plane and he came in and he wrestled Kenny, and those guys were blown up in the first minute of the match, and the match was horrible. But you're talking about Brian Cage, who I've worked with 50 times, and 47 times he had one of the best matches on the show.
Yeah.
You know, so when you're young, it's going to happen a lot. But you need to get that experience. And that's why we tried to get her the experience as the valet and slowly bring her along.
Sandra, let's talk first about that experience as a valet. What did that allow you to discover about not only how it is when you're actually in front of the audience, you're actually, you have certain things that you need to do, but on top of that, how was it for you in terms of discovering yourself as a performer?
Oh, I was like, I'm gonna unmute myself, but I wasn't even on mute. it was a really cool experience. It was more than cool, but getting to work with Thomas Day, I felt was already a big achievement. It's, you know, like, sure. I mentioned, like, only watching live wrestling, like, even into wrestling, I still was really just drawn to independent wrestling. I wasn't, you know, too keen on everything else. It was just something I fell in love with. And I think just getting to be a valet and getting to really understand how fans are and how drawn into matches they can be and how much a valet actually has an effect on that, it any of the emotions I would radiate, they would radiate right back. Like, I, like as mentioned before, I started off as a heel. You know, who would have guessed that would be a great idea, you know? But it, it channeled a sort of aggression that I now bring into all of my matches. It helped me find, you know, from being really shy and awkward, to bringing out that just natural aggression that everyone sort of has but doesn't know how to really bring out of themselves. And so I think it really was just pivotal to my wrestling career because it helped me just get that comfortability, helped me understand how like fans can interact with your matches when you're putting them together. It just sort of opens up all these new layers to something that could just be as easy as, all right, let's go out there. Well, now you can just deep dive into what you're actually putting out there, what you're going to make them feel, how you're going to feel, like how everything is, just because if you believe what you're doing and you do everything with conviction, it's like, there's no way that they can't feel what you're feeling. There's no way it's not going to radiate something to make them feel that way. And this goes that way for valet. If you feel everything that you're doing with truly, you know, if you believe everything you're doing, everyone is likely going to believe that with you. I remember when it's like the funniest moment, just being a valet. It was like when, especially being healed, it's like I would have, there was this one fan, I'm like, you know, being all my hippie yoga, whatever. And that just made her so angry. She started walking around the guardrail. Rocky T, or what was it, Chief, had to like step in between. I'm like, that is so funny. I was only just sort of like doing some, you know, yoga demon stuff, and she was just not having it. And it just, like, the way you interact with these people could literally just like trail on with you. That lady did not like me for a good majority of my whole career. It still barely doesn't, you know. It's what you do, and like the people's first interaction with you can really just grab onto them. They'll remember that, and they'll be like, I don't like her because she did that to me one time, and now I'll forever boo her. And it's the same reason, like, getting into wrestling. It's like you see these people and they leave such an impact on you, whether it be just like the way they, like, I don't know, the way they have you cheer for them, the way they ask for that sympathy. It really just can go so far as just like entertainment itself. And they're just, valets, I think, are just so pivotal to wrestlers. I think they could do so much. And I think being a valet really helps see the worth in that, where manager positions, valet positions, they're sort of seen as like that. Like, a lot of people look at them as like a lower tier just because they're not the wrestlers doing the work, but they're just as important, I feel, into being that growth of a wrestler, helping the other wrestlers grow, whether they even decide to become a wrestler. It's truly like a gem to have those sort of moments and that opportunity to be able to have valeted for Thomas Day, especially.
All right. So we talked a little bit about that. Now let's talk about that match that you had with Taya.
No.
No. Okay. You know, honestly, through your eyes, what was your experience? You know, how do you look at that? And how does that motivate you to continue to get better and learn more about what it takes to be at that level of someone like her?
You know, I feel like I give myself a lot of slack for it, but I was watching it back the other day for an FSW like match review. And of course that was the one that was just magically picked out of nowhere. And I was watching it back, and I think for truly being as probably less than 20 matches in, and that's still, Taya Valkyrie is still one of the most notable wrestlers I've ever wrestled in my career. She's probably is the most notable one. So I think being able to have that opportunity so early on in my career is something I'm super grateful for. And I try not to be hard on myself, because truthfully, to just be in that position, even be considered in that position, it was beyond belief. It was exciting. It was something I've never got to experience and still have very little experience in, you know. Yeah. To I think, and that's, I don't know. I every time I think about it, I just cringe, but it wasn't even, now thinking back, I probably had so little to offer as a wrestler. I'm like, yeah, I could do this, this, and this. And it's like probably like a pinch of what she probably had in mind. And I think just wanting to protect her, protect me, you know, it was something that I can look back on and really just kind of like laugh and just know that I've made so much progress since then, probably made more progress in probably five matches after that than I have. But it was the first time Joe has ever told me good job, and he gave me a hug after that. And I remember that's the only thing I really kind of like held on to that night, because I feel like matches, despite how they go, I still try and look at them all as like just little stepping stones. It's like I never try to linger on one match, but I think it's more the emotions that I think get me to that place are what help me grow more, you know, because every single match I have, I automatically know what goes wrong and can fix it and move on to the next one. But I think just kind of hearing like good job, even though I know I didn't do a good job, and still being able to sort of have that gratification, especially by Joe, it's very far and few. I think just meant more to me than, you know, how I feel about that match itself. And I know I always get slack for it, but I can always look back on it knowing like I was probably still a year in. I was still probably like a rookie, you know? And so I'd like to be nice to younger Cassandra, and tell her she still did a good job with what she was given and how she handled it.
Joe, that's the first like 40 weeks we've been doing this. It's the first story I've heard of you actually giving a hug to a wrestler.
Yeah, I don't recall that, but I do recall.
It was right as I was setting up the chairs at the end, too.
See, what happened was I was telling good job to the person behind Cassandra.
No.
Did a good job, and she thought I was talking to her, obviously.
You know, in those cases, when you have a young wrestler like that, who's going into a match with such a wonderful veteran who you can tell Taya enjoys what she does. She loves wrestling with a passion. Mm-hmm. And you give this chance to someone as young as Sandra. And then, you know, you can look back and you can see greenness. You can see, as Sandra just said, you'll look in the match. It wasn't as bad as she thought it was, but she can see the greenness in herself. When you feel that someone might have done a good job, but you still want to keep motivating them, is there a way to encourage without discouraging? So, you know, how do you deal with not necessarily pointing out all their bad shit to make them feel like they're horribly shitting the bed, so that they don't lose the confidence, you know, for the next 3, 4, 5 matches and just, you know, start to continue to grow?
Well, I try to be as honest as I possibly could be, okay? In saying that, I'm not going to pick apart every single move and said, hey, this thing over here you did suck, this sucked, that sucked, this sucked, that sucked, that was okay, that was terrible. You know, you got to put everything, you know, into perspective. As fans watching the match, they probably looked at it in a totally different light than the way I looked at it. When I'm looking at the match, I know what is supposed to be getting done in most cases. Obviously, I don't know every, you know, move for move for move. You know, I'm doing the commentary, I'm watching, and I could see, you know, a mess up here, a mess up there. And in all honesty, you know, saying the match was horrible, it's probably a little harsh. It probably wasn't horrible. But there's certain things that I remember. So I remember, I'm always going to remember more of the bad things than the good things. You know, hey, that arm drag takeover was really good. Well, you know, you practiced that 4,000 times. So, you know, I really can't commend you on doing a headlock takeover. You know, if you can, if you're wrestling Taya at the one of our biggest shows of the year and you can't do a headlock takeover, then that's my fault for putting you in the match.
Right.
Okay. So I always try not to discourage. Generally, if people talk to me during the match, during the thing, if it's really shitty, people will say, oh, how was it? You know, I got to look back on stuff because a lot of the stuff I remember may not be that good.
Right.
Okay. So I don't want to smash somebody until I kind of really, you know, see it again. You know, there's things in my mind in the match that I recall seeing, but as a veteran watching Taya, she made the match more than passable.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think the fans were like, oh my God, Sandra Moon, she sucks. Why is she in this match? You know, I think Taya did a good enough job, and that's what I expect from the veterans, and that's what the veterans are asked to do, especially when we do like Future Shocks and we do these matches with the younger people. It's like we try to feed them the line, and a veteran can feed Sandra and she can also take back. So if things aren't going the right way, maybe the finish is a little sooner. Maybe the comeback didn't really happen, but it was because they were trying to protect the sanctity of the match. So a match that maybe could have really went off the rails still ended up being an okay match.
Yeah.
And for someone her age, you know, she may have been overwhelmed. She may have been intimidated, whatever. She went in there and did what she was capable of doing. Just a couple things didn't work out well. And in wrestling, if you have a match and a couple of things don't work out well, it usually translate to a lot of things not working out well.
Right.
Because when you're younger, it's harder to adapt to the mistake. Because now in your head, you realize you made a mistake. How do I correct it? And while you're trying to correct it, there's a good chance you just made another mistake.
Yep.
But that's what experience means. And that's why it's like bringing in name people to wrestle some of the younger guys. You know, we try to do that Hero Lou. You know, here's a young, you know, young stud. This guy, you know, people see really good things. And he's always had an issue when he was wrestling, I guess you could say, down to the competition, to where he was too giving.
Yeah.
So we felt it was necessary to bring in some veteran people and let him work a Hammerstone, and let him work a Graves, and even an Andy Brown from SoCal. You know, Andy Brown came down one time, wasn't even booked, and we didn't really have room, but I felt, you know what? This is what I need you to do, Andy. Can you do this? You know, and he put over the young guy and made him look like $1 million. And that's how Hero Lou is going to grow. Hero Lou's not going to be the type of guy who's going to grow by beating up Bret the Threat and Nick Zander, who've had two matches under their belts.
Right.
You know, he's not in position to carry the load. And it's the same thing now with Sandra. Now that we have more women, we got, you know, Alice Blair and we got Dana Lynn, I'm pretty sure they're going to ask her questions because she's the girl they're going to see a lot, and they've seen that she's already had success in the business, not only at FSW, but she's wrestled in California. She's wrestled in Arizona. So the things that she's gotten to do by getting her experience, these girls have 5-10 matches under their belt, and they want to get to that level. So, of course, they're going to hit her up, I would assume, or at least I hope they do.
Yeah. You know,
try to pick her brain, you know, as the 20-year-old veteran that she is, you know.
You know, speaking of that, other experiences that you've had in Arizona and California, what has it been like for you to get that experience for working like for Marquez, when you're talking about more intensive TV production, longer taped days where you're sitting around, you know, maybe not doing anything for a couple hours. What has that been for you as a learning curve, Sandra?
So as far as like television wise, I thoroughly enjoy going to Hollywood a lot. I've also done CWFAZ for specifically Marquez and Nick Bonanno and everything. Really great locker rooms to be in. Really, like, you're surrounded by so many like top tier like SoCal talent, especially more from like the Midwest. It, like, that alone is already like a really cool learning experience, getting to be around really great minds who have learned from other really great minds, and just getting to wrestle those style matches, I think really helped translate into the independent style of wrestling, where it's like, I know cameras, I know hard cam, I know all those specific details that go into, and I think about them every single time I wrestle at FSW or any other place I go to, just because I know how much of a hand that can come into as far as like getting your own footage and getting your own photos. It's truly a really knowledgeable experience, especially when you go with the right people and you're surrounded by your own really great like crew. But I remember all those trips because they were always like the longest ones, especially to Port Hueneme. Like, those ones are, they were really humbling. You know, you sit in the car for almost 6 hours in the freezing cold and the soup, like super hot weather. It could go from literally like high to low in just a matter of like an hour. So it's really humbling. And recently I went to Indiana, like, or Kentucky for Paradigm, and we shot some episodes over there. And that was like whole polar opposite experience, where they were, I did three episodes, but it was all the way from probably around 5 o'clock to 2:30 in the morning. And I was the very last match. But that was a really great experience, where it wasn't more time oriented. It was literally just having a lot of really great matches with a lot of really great talent. And it was a lot of fun. Not that television TV isn't like the most fun thing in the world, but it's definitely sort of limiting in a way, where just kind of doing just independent style wrestling, just whatever, it was really humbling in its own experience, where you meet so many great people who just want to have fun while wrestling, where it's not like a sort of it's like not a very reputational thing. Like, no one minded that they were going over. It wasn't very reputational or competition based. It was just two competitors really just putting their best out there. And I couldn't have been any more grateful. It was such a good experience that I hope I could just bring back to my home at FSW, to my home, to where it helps a lot of our different styled wrestlers, to let them sort of know that, like, there's no limits on what you can do. You know, you're not trapped in a sort of style or way to act or way to wrestle. It's just such an open world of what you can do. And I think that's something that I just think about a lot with how many different people we have, you know, where we're all preparing for TV. We're all preparing for that sort of bigger picture, but I know we can get there because of how great our production is. You know, we're very, like, you go to other schools and just training, it's already such a different landscape of what we have. I'm so grateful, you know, to be have brought up into this, you know, into this school. So what we have, we're already taking full advantage of that. And I think it could only really get better from here once everybody sort of just finds their true selves. I think that just, it's unstoppable, really.
Joe, you know, especially when she goes to these places in Arizona and stuff, it says, yeah, I'm Sandra Moon. I'm from FSW. So this is how we're going to do the match. Okay. Now, that's what usually happens from what I've heard.
Is that true, Sandra?
No, I mean, it depends, because a lot of the people I wrestle are either on my same level or like below. And, you know, I've never like,
so what are you saying? You're saying you're better than everybody. Is that what you're saying?
You know, and maybe in my own head, but maybe not. No, but it really just depends. Like, I wrestle so many different people of, like, experience. I'm never in a position where it's sort of like, I don't get, like, Taya Valkyries all too often. People sure. with that much experience as far as, like, television. I feel like Heather Monroe is someone I definitely run into a lot, but... And now she has that experience with AEW, and, like, she's had, like, so much television time where she's certainly someone who takes a lot of the reins on our matches. But I feel like it's always just a meeting of minds whenever I'm putting together matches. It's sure. always usually 50-50.
Joe, when you look at the landscape of women's wrestling in FSW, and, you know, it started off being very, very bare, and now is starting to flourish. Two cornerstones that come to mind right away are Sandra and Maserati. How do you approach it when you see you have two people who essentially, even though Maserati, you know, might have had a little different experience than Sandra in getting to where she is, they're going to be crossing each other's paths probably for years to come, if not
oh, yeah, we, just we're, here. We're already preparing the best of 45 series between Oz and Cassandra. They're going to alternate the titles 22 times each. And then, you know, they're going to be the first time ever 23-time FSW Women's Champion. You know, and then when Dana Lynn turns 18, she'll take the belts off both of them. You know what I mean?
But is
yeah,
it...
see, the thing is, at the time, Cassandra, we knew she would have to be a babyface. She had a lot of support. Her family, her friends are going to come there. And, you know, we try to explain to people, hey, she's a heel booer, but it's not going to happen. You know, the brother, the sister, the family, grandma, everybody, you know, there's no way possible that they're going to boo Sandra. Okay. She's a young girl that they've seen at 16, 17 years old. She's grown up in FSW. Our fan base refuses to not like her. You know what I mean? There might be a couple that don't care for her. But the majority of people there see what she has done and accomplished in a short period of time. She is going to be well-liked. So the idea was, with Taylor not really being around, Thomas Day was taking some time off. She got injured. It was the perfect time to, you know, reset. Because at that time, Lacey Ryan had just come to FSW. And her skill set is heads above better than almost every woman wrestler I've seen. Okay. Yeah. So now Maz and Sandra, who were probably going to be without Lacey around, they were going to be the top face and the top heel of the women's division. And with Sandra getting hurt, I would never say it was a good thing that somebody got hurt, but it gave her time to be away. It allowed Lacey to really explode as a babyface. So then, as Sandra was getting ready to come back, and we had many ideas, you know, with Maz and with Sandra and with Lacey, and the ultimate goal is for Sandra to be the top babyface woman in FSW. Now, if that meant down the line it was going to cause Lacey to turn heel, you know, those were all, you know, major thoughts where we were going to go forward. And unfortunately, with the pandemic, then the WWE has the nerve to sign her. You know, it, you know, puts a crook in everything that we were trying to do. So now we have to kind of take a step back and figure out, you know, where we're going to go. You know, Maz, she's gotten some notoriety. She's got the OVW title. She's got the FSW title. She's got a good buzz around her. You know, MK has gotten involved and wants to do the women's shows again. You know, we're looking to hopefully do it again in mid-February. We're looking at, like, I think the 18th or 19th, because there's a guy we know, Daniel from England, who's doing some stuff. And he's bringing, like, jazz in and some other people doing, like, a closed set shoot on that Wednesday and Thursday, that it might be a perfect time to do a show that Friday, because we'll have our women here as it is, but there are also going to be some outside talent that's already been flown in that we could mix and match and have another outstanding FSW women's show, yeah. You know? But, you know, the thing is, Bryn Thorne has improved immensely. Yep. You know, very easy to work with. She drives out on her own sometimes. She doesn't care. She just wants to work, you know? So she's somebody I really look at as someone that I'm trying to get in as often as possible. And then we have, you know, Strella. You know, she's the big monster of the division. And then we got Alice Blair, who's very quickly becoming a favorite with the staff and the crew. They really like her work ethic, and they like what she's doing. And then we have the girl Dana Lynn, who's just 16 years old, and she's had a couple of matches and has been tremendous. You know, at 16, her matches were way better than Sandra's. You know what I'm saying?
They really are.
So now the key is, how do we build a division? You know, MK's got some contacts. So, you know, we got the lady from CMLL to be at the last show. We got Katarina to be at the show. We had Ruby Ray's booked, COVID stuff. She ended up not being able to make it, you know. So there's definitely, you know, a lot of talent out there, but there's only so many spots, you know, when we're trying to do 8 or 9 matches. Well, if I bring in 2 or 3 girls out of California, that means 2 or 3 of the local ones don't get to be on the show. So what do you end up doing? So Sandra wrestles Moz 305 times. And now Strella gets back involved because she's been out, injuries, things going on, to where she needs reps.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, she can't go out and beat Dana Lynn and Alice Blair 30 times. Nobody cares after that. If she beats them the first 1 or 2 times, they want to see something new. So, yeah. You know, that's the idea of being able to run more consistently. It's like, we're not looking to run once a week because all the money we're going to make, you know, we're trying to do closed sets, 30, 40 people at a show, our hardcore fan base, maybe some empty arena stuff that we could put on the network and things like that. But it's trying to get as many reps as possible. You know, if we didn't close down in March, April, May, into June and July before we ran our first show back. So if Sandra was ready between March, April, May, and June, 4 or 5 months between working here, Arizona, and California, you know, she probably missed out on 50, 60 matches that she had, you know, and that's only going with 2 matches a weekend.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of them do 3. So if you just say 8 to 10 matches a month, this pandemic has probably stopped her from working 100 matches this year. Because when we did run, we ran a couple shows, then we didn't run for 2 months. Then we ran 2 weeks later, and then we didn't run again, you know? So unfortunately, somebody who's a 3-year veteran 3 years ago has a lot more experience than a 3-year veteran who started 3 years ago. So,
yeah. Sandra, that's a great point. What has it been like for you in terms of having to deal with this past year of, you know, shut down, stop, start, go here, go there, stop, shut down? Like, has that affected your, you know, your sense of timing, your sense of skill? What has that been like to try to stay in ring shape and keep the rust off while also trying to stay fairly healthy and abide by the laws and rules that every one of us had to live by?
So it's actually, I don't know. It's a tough one. So I think I broke my collarbone around November, and that was already like, man, it couldn't get any worse from here.
Yeah.
And then I had come back in March, which is already a lot sooner than I had hoped to be able to recover, because my collarbone wasn't fully recovered.
Sure.
But I was still able to do wrestling, and I was working out literally all throughout that whole injury period. So I was in shape, but I wasn't in ring shape, which are two completely separate things, just because I wasn't able to fully wrestle. So I had come back in March, and I had wrestled for DOA out in Portland. And so that was a really fun experience, and it kind of just struck off this really cool chord. I'm like, wow, I'm off to great things. I was getting booked at like in Oakland very frequently over there. But then this pandemic literally hit like that right after. So it sort of just snatched up, like Joe was saying, like hundreds of probable bookings, you know, just from that period alone. But in a way, I sort of saw it as like a blessing in disguise. Totally aside from the fact that it's a national pandemic, you know, as that is really, you know, detrimental to a lot of families and just people in general. But, you know, I feel like that was sort of a blessing in disguise for my injury, you know, where that first match back, while it wasn't the best, you know, because I missed out on all that wrestling, but it was still sort of a good experience to get back into that groove. It certainly needed more recovery time. Like a recovery for like a fully broken like collarbone is usually 6 months, where I sort of rush that process each day by going to the gym, by just not letting it fully get that healing that it needed. I went back probably 4 months in. So it definitely gave me a lot of time to recover, build strength that I just needed to get back to where I was before, where I already wasn't very like much strong. And with that, like any of the matches we had at FSW back from the pandemic were very rough as it is, as training was still going, not very consistently though, of course, like the gyms weren't open. So it was basically finding time to, and I was working a full-time job during the whole pandemic as well. So it's finding time to do everything was just kind of crazy, where it really was like a 9-to-5 job with like almost 2 hours of overtime, then working out in my backyard at like super late at night, then finding the time to go to training 2 out of the 7 days at super late times, like 9 o'clock at night. And then just like trying to find my group. And luckily I did have like Adriel and Laz, who already are super, like they're really creative brains and they're all really athletic in their own ways. So that was a lot of a big help for me too. And it was a tough one. It's for sure the on and off, like the inconsistency isn't something that I'm used to. Like I've always like been at training weekly, or at least tried my best to, you know, done wrestling almost every weekend, was in the gym probably 4 or 5 times a week and working a full-time job. So it was really hard to not have that consistency in my life anymore, let alone having to just juggle it all. But as far as recovery goes, impeccable. Like my collarbone was healed by the time wrestling came back in August. It was just a matter of getting more ring time in and more of everything like that, more reps in for wrestling, which are non-existent and still barely are existent, you know?
Yeah.
Where at least now I can handle it because the gyms are open and my job's just a lot more lenient. So it was definitely rocky. But I think all in all, I still choose to see it as like a blessing in disguise, because it gave me that time to come back to FSW, to come back with more of a better idea of what I wanted to be and who I am. Where I've truly never felt more comfortable being myself than I have been. And I think that's probably just the best that came out of it, is just being able to recover and heal from everything and just be the best wrestler that I am. And then right now I feel like I'm just truly flourishing while there is still a pandemic going on. That's something I definitely take into consideration, especially with like my family. But I feel like I've been presented with more opportunities and more opportunities to grow and help especially with our growing women's division, help that grow as well in this downtime, where there isn't really a rush. That's what I always kind of say. It's like there's no rush to do anything, but just sort of gather the small bits and pieces that you need to feel comfortable. It's like right now is probably the best time to start growing. And that's all I could really recommend and tell myself and tell others around me. It's like, you should just be focusing on growing, because while there's like an influx of people being signed right now, I feel like they were on that track, you know.
Sure.
Everybody's just on that track, and our journeys right now are sort of just different, and that's okay.
So Joe, as we kind of start getting towards a wrap up here, you know, she came in because of Laz. Who do you think, and it might be an unfair comparison, but who do you think is on a better trajectory? Who might work harder? Who might have better matches? Brother versus sister, you know, is there a comparison or maybe even a favoritism amongst the trainers and yourself?
No, not at all. Laz works extremely hard. I think in the very beginning, Sandra kind of bypassed him. And it may not be because she was better than him. It's because Laz had 40 people that he had to try to get impressive over. You know, there's a lot of young talent there. You know, there's Sky High and there's Adriel and there's Damon and there's all these young guys that, you know, look at the tag division. We, you know, you got Laz and Adriel, and we bring in Watson, who's real good from Arizona, and Fresco's young and up and coming, and Braxton and the Suavecitos and Sky High. And you have to find a niche. You got to find something for yourself. You know, I know Cody's really embraced Laz and took him under his wing. And it's no disrespect to Sandra, but sometimes in this business, being a woman is better than being the guy, because we have 4, 5, 6 girls, 6 women that are competing for spots. Well, we got 46 guys that are competing for spots. So it gives them an opportunity. And a lot of other companies outside, they're always looking for a women's match. Well, if they're looking for a women's match and they're looking for somebody new, and they're in Arizona, New Mexico, Utah, California, whatever, who's got a buzz around them? Well, in Vegas, it's Sandra and Maz. Obviously, Lacey's gone. Those are the two with the buzz. So what happens? Down the road, Sandra brings Alice Blair to Arizona with her. Hey, they need a spot. They need something to happen. Boom, she gets put in, and now she'll get the opportunity. Well, with Laz, the problem is, okay, well, we want Sky High. Do you have anybody else? Well, there's 20 other people to choose from.
Yeah.
And, you know, and in wrestling, it's apples and oranges. It's like, what style are you looking for today? What do you need? You know, a lot of guys don't understand it. You know, a lot of times it's like, you know, they'll get frustrated because they feel they're here, yet the guy who was here got on the show.
Right.
And they didn't. And it's like, it's the role on the show that I'm looking for. So you might be here, but I need somebody to get thumped by someone that we're trying to put on a trajectory. Now, we have you on a good trajectory. You're just not in this match. But if you want to get pummeled and get blasted by somebody, that's fine, because I have no problem explaining why I would do that. Now, some people will actually ask me, while others will just be pissed off and complain to other people that think I don't hear about it anyway, which, of course, I do, you know. And it's like there's a rhyme and reason for everything, you know. Even random matches that are put together, you know, you're looking for certain things. You're looking how someone reacts into a situation where, you know, I've never been one to where a lot of people, whether it's trainers, higher up wrestlers, you know, feeling people should be punished for their actions. Like if they act stupid and they cry about something. And I've never been about that. It's kind of like, let's try to give positive reinforcement. This is why I need you to lose in 45 seconds. It's nothing against you. You have to start at the bottom and work your way up. Now, obviously, Kevin Cross didn't walk in and put over Laz in 45 seconds because Kevin was a guy that was protected because of his size and his ability. And so sometimes in those situations, you get some bigger guys who they feel that they've progressed pretty quickly, but they don't get on a show for a little bit longer than one of the younger, smaller guys like the kid Nick, who's been around for not very long. Well, Nick's an undersized guy who works harder than anybody. He sells his ass off. So he's a guy that's in a position as enhancement talent.
Right.
So just because I'm bringing in Hammerstone and Graves and all this great talent, and then some of the regulars don't get to be on the show, it's not a slight at them. And, hey, I like Nick better. It's I need Nick to do a certain job that I know he is going to do. While you, for example, I may have penciled in to do something with somebody else that's leading to something else.
Right.
And unfortunately, you can't tell 45 people every little thing that you're going to do. But the ones that have no issue coming up to me, hey, what's going on Saturday? Hey, do you have anything for me? Hey, what about this? You know?
Yeah.
You know, even Sandra, you know, she made a pitch. She was asking what was going on Saturday. Pretty good idea. It's possible that may end up being what we utilize. But a lot of times people don't think that I hear. You know, I'm always receptive to ideas because, you know, we have 8, 9, 10 matches. Not everybody's involved in a storyline.
Right.
So we're not only juggling, trying to do TV and trying to juggle storylines we have, but we're also a training facility that's trying to get experience to younger people and giving them an opportunity to grow a character, create a character, try out a character, you know?
Yeah.
There's all these different things that go in where if I was PWG or GCW, all I would do is pluck 22 people. We have 8 or 9 matches, and too bad for the rest of you.
Yeah.
You know, like what we said, you know, I talk about Tito and Che and a Ryan Taylor and a Brandon Gatson. These are guys that I think are hugely talented, and they are way better than every single one of my students. But I need to get my students opportunities.
Right.
So instead of giving Tito and Che a random one-off tag match, I won't utilize them unless I have something for them, you know?
Yeah.
And Brandon Gatson came back out of nowhere. He'd been disappeared, came back. He was coming to town. He's like, hey, I want to check out the show. I'm like, hey, you know what? You want to work a match? I thought it would be a great opportunity for Chris Bay to work somebody that he knew no knowledge of, you know? Brandon Gatson, extremely talented. They had an awesome match. And then we talked a little bit more. Gatson had some family in town, so he would be willing to come out and make a trip. And we had him come out, and he had another awesome match. So it's like now we're trying to get him back into the mix. But then in the meantime, Hammerstone and Graves, they love class.
Yeah.
And, you know, here's a guy – we are very short on heavyweight heels that are believable as like, wow, this guy could be a champion down the line. Him and Hiro Luke could be awesome. Him and Shogun, yeah. You know, him and Hammerstone, you know. So now class, because of recommendations, is now a main roster guy. Jordan Cruz, a main roster guy. Well, by adding them, it also can take away from somebody on the lower end of the scale that may have gotten a match, and now it's between a semi-established guy and a brand new guy, but the brand new guy is what I need to go out there and have a fresh face for somebody like a class to beat the fuck out of.
Yeah.
To try to get him to rise the ranks. You can't rise the ranks and start at the top. You have to start at the bottom and you have to work your way up. And then now with all the tag teams we got, Laz and Adriel, the Suavecitos, the Bad Bitches have become, they were hot and nobody even, we knew nothing. It was like Josh is a great, and Jay Vidal is awesome.
Yeah.
He'd be an Olympic champion. Parada came in, hey, this looks like this would be a great tag team. Well, they're heels and the crowd goes crazy for them and they love them. And now they've kind of jumped everybody and now they're feuding with the RMB, the Bonus Boys. You know, while the Unguided are trying to do their thing, and Death Proof is kind of bouncing back and forth, wrestling the Suavecitos and Laz and Adriel and Sky High and all this, because we have so many good tag teams. Right. But again, we're also limited to how many matches. So the more shows we do, the more matches. And it's trying to get people to understand, just because you're not on the show this week, you'll most likely be on the show next week.
Yeah. Sandra, any final thoughts here about Joe, any stories, anything that, you know, strikes you as maybe something that is funny that you, you know, hold on to, or, you know, is there anything that you even want to say to Joe? Like, hey, Joe, I'd like to be the women's champion within the next 3 months.
I'm a sucker for a good story and a good come up story. I'm not really, I like asking for, like, you know, being in the know, but I'm never one for really like pushing on to certain like things like a title or, sure, you know, maybe some matches would be cool with like more experienced girls or whatever. But, you know, I firmly believe in the idea that this is a process. You know, I firmly believe in the idea that, you know, if I manifest, I've manifest this title years ago, you know, when, since it first came into existence, since I was in that very first match, it's like, I already know that, you know, what's meant for me will come for me whenever that time is right. And so I'm not really in a rush to speed up that process at, sure, all, just because, like, if I could win it at a Sam's Town, you know, I'm not going to pressure it to be in the arena, not any down talk to the arena, you know, but it's like, I would love that grander stage if whenever that time comes, you know.
Sure.
I'm pretty sure by the time she's 35, she'll get to be the women's champion.
Exactly. So no rush, you know, like I'll be in this for the long run. Yeah. But like, there's no real way I feel towards that. I think I'm, if anything, just more excited for the possibilities that the FSW women's division has to come. I feel like, you know, as it takes a village. It takes a village to get these things going. And like he says, it's like, it's with more consistency, that's all we could really hope for to get, yeah, things going. And I'm fine with the spot I am right now, because I feel like it's a really great learning experience for me to get to work with Alice Blairs and get to work with Dana Lynn's and Shayna for the 40 millionth time. It's like, and Estrella especially, it's like, yeah, she is a prime example of, you know, wanting to protect her and just not, you know, just not throwing her out there to the wolves. She is someone who I would be on the look on. She acts like a star. She is everything to be a part of that. So I think, like everything, it's a process. And, you know, as much as I would love to just talk smack on Joe, he's done a lot of really good things for me. And I, everything that I've worked for, it's been acknowledged. Like, I've paid my dues, I feel like, a lot for a long time, and I held it down as gym manager. I did all that, and I think right now it's just a matter of time before things start really blowing up for FSW, especially the women's division. That's something that I'm so excited for, because it can give so many opportunities to girls, I think, on the Midwest, you know, that are searching for this sort of feeling of, you know, what FSW has to offer, and really extending it to more than just what we have here on the Midwest. I think it can, or no, in the West Coast, it can really bring so many good opportunity and learning experience to so many, like so much women out there, because there's so much talent to be found. And I think that's something that I'm just so excited for, with the women's shows that we're having and just the overall like product of what we have to offer. I think it's only just a matter of time. And, you know, when the pandemic sort of lightens down, and who knows when that'll happen, it's, I think we're still going at a really steady pace that I'm still just really grateful for, because it's still an opportunity at the end of the day. And like, we all know what we deserve. And I think all of us at FSW, we definitely get that, get our reward one way or another with time, especially.
Joe, any final thoughts on Sandra and, you know, what she means to you and FSW, especially going forward with, you know, developing what is going to be one of the, I think, most wild rides of a women's division within the next, you know, 2-3 years. I got a feeling we're going to see, yeah, we're going to see some amazing stuff coming out of FSW.
Well, the good thing for Sandra is if the wrestling career doesn't work out, if we open up again, she's got an open offer to work the crew at Sandstown. That's how how beloved she was from the crew, that basically said if she did a job that they would actually hire her. That's, you know, that was from the woman running the ring crew. So, you know, that just shows at her age and being a woman, the respect that she got just because of her personality and is always helpful and always was always looking to help. And, you know, as I say, I always try to reward the people that, you know, go out of their way. You know, it's easy to say when you sign up, hey, you know, you need to be here for breakdown and setup. And then sometimes you see the people and they decide that when it's time to grab a guardrail, they need to have a conversation with you specifically at that moment. You know, the biggest issue is the laziness of a lot of people. And, you know, as running the ring crew show, she can tell you about people that try to dart in and out. They take way longer to get a guardrail, you know, and it has nothing to do with anything but just being lazy and trying to skate by. Yeah. And generally you see the people that are looking to skate by, and you see the people that are never content with where they're at. You know, I know a lot of people complain like, hey, I'm a low carder, I should be a mid carder. Hey, I'm a mid carder, I should be a main eventer. You know, but the thing is, if you look at the people in FSW who have gotten to the top, it's always taken time, and it's always been the hard workers that have continued to get there. Because the ones that weren't the hard workers, they would fall off a lot quicker, whether it was an attitude in the, you know, in the locker room, whether it was, you know, not wanting to put other people over. You know, Hammerstone's a prime example. You know, he has done everything I ever asked him to do. And then he became a national name, and he's still that guy.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, it's a little easier when you say that about Bay and Cross. We trained them from scratch, so you would hope the loyalty would be there. But Hammerstone was just a guy that I picked out of what I saw and brought him in, and he's always been that respectful guy and appreciative of the opportunities, you know, whether it was a tryout at Impact, whether it was getting on the Ring of Honor show, or whether it was getting backstage and just seeing how these shows work. You know, there's so many people that want to be a part of FSW just because they don't know me. They just know that FSW is a company that seems to have great talent and seems to have a lot of connections inside the business. And they think if they're good enough that they may have a chance to excel more so than their own promotion, because they don't have the ability to do what we could do for people, you know?
Yeah. You know, it's very cool to see this journey that you've taken, Sandra. I think that in just watching you, whether it be in a class, whether it be in the ring on a big show or on a smaller show, whether it be on my TV as I'm flipping around at 1 o'clock in the morning and Championship Wrestling from Hollywood is on and I see you show up on the screen, you can see that there's a dedication there and a work ethic that is worth what you're putting into it, you know? And that's enjoyable from, you know, my eyes of being a fan, but also being someone who's been around and seen things over the years that you just connect and you go, you know what? She's got something there and she's working hard at it. And I think that it's just so cool to see this journey that you've taken from, you know, not being really an athletic or motivated into a wrestling, you know, role that is thriving now. And it's just so cool to see you get the opportunity to work here and be on a bigger stage. And I can't wait till we see the, you know, Instagram message from the WWE, like we saw with Zoe Stark now. You know, it's a matter of time, and hopefully we'll see, you know, Sandra Moon, you know, whether it be WWE or AEW or, you know, even Impact or ROH, it looks like the future is really bright. And those people who are watching or listening, if you don't know Sandra's work, I urge you to check out, you know, Fight TV,
the Twitch, FSW Network.
FSW Network.
Pay for it, will ya? Can't get all the freebies.
And
$6.
And of course, Twitch as well, the Twitch network that's going on as well. There's so many outlets to watch Sandra's work and also FSW's work. And I encourage everyone listening and watching to do that. And
network exclusive this Saturday. Network exclusive.
I was just going to ask you, Joe, what time can people expect that? Is 7 o'clock bell time?
7 o'clock bell time? The main event is going to be for the heavyweight championship where Graves is going to wrestle Sin Bodhi. So,
oh, wow. That sounds very,
you know, I've heard Sin complain for a long time that he hasn't had a title shot. So as they say, be careful what you ask for. And, you know, the Unguided will be there and Hiro Lu and Shogun and,
really cool,
will be there.
Cool women's wrestling.
Yes, there will be a women's wrestling match for sure, you know, but it is exclusive if you have the network. So in reality, you're getting to watch a pay-per-view for $6.49, even less if you buy for the whole year. You get 2 months free.
Yeah.
And we actually filmed some stuff as Lacey. We'll be having, we're having a ceremony, a poster ceremony for Lacey. Okay. You know, the first time we've been able to actually do it live with the person there.
Awesome.
So that's an exciting moment. We talked with her, Howard and her, and we're going to have a little documentary on the rise of Lacey Ryan. So that'll be coming exclusively to the network, you know. If Sandra plays her cards right after the Maserati, Dana Lynn, and Alice Blair one, maybe she'll be next in line.
Period. Exactly.
Well,
exactly.
Let's salute the fact that the opportunity is there for you, Sandra, to grab the silver ring and have that big old poster banner revealed of yourself. Let's hope.
Okay, wait, this is gonna be my post. And that, wait, less sunlight though, better lighting, because Joey's gonna be taking it, and so it's like and that's it.
Well, there we go. We've already got the poster picture all planned out, and now it's just a matter of getting there. That's
soon
it.
We're gonna need a bigger wall soon.
Yeah.
Like there's a whole nother ball in front of it.
Well, because we actually have two others on hold. Brian Cage, FSW champion, AEW superstar, and of course Hammerstone.
Yep.
You know, those are homegrown talents. You know, Kenny was squawking why he wasn't on there, but it's like, yeah, you've been with us from day one. You were already a Ring of Honor guy, Kenny. Relax. I told him, unless we can get the pose from The Bachelorette, then maybe he's got a shot.
Well, on that note, everyone, please subscribe to the network, just even to check out the pay-per-view this Saturday at 7 p.m. Pacific time. And thank you for tuning in. And as always, please follow FSW Wrestling as well as the Biggest Bad Boys of Podcasting. And thank you very much. And we'll see you guys next time.
Thank you.